Chapter 13. Storm Center. Cursus. Sickle Blade. Cord stared down the sight. The oil-black shape of the Iron Hands Predator was to his left. Both it and War Anvil had come to a halt as soon as they had crested the last line of hills and seen what waited for them on the plains of Kediv. The storm was a pale band across the dying land. Dark smudges rolled within it, like bruises forming, then fading in minutes. Lightning speckled its height. He could see the winds whipping its edges into blurred gauze. It was a great beast of a storm. He could feel the hairs on his neck and arms rising. Sparks of static were pinging off the hull. And there was something else, something that clung to the colours, and even to the stale taste of the air in his breathe mask. He had never believed in gods or supernatural forces. He had seen psykers and the impossibility they could make possible, but that was nothing more than something he did not understand, a subset of the many things which made the stars burn and time pass. The universe was a cold, uncaring machine, and humanity had only the place it could carve out for itself. Goodness, evil, kindness, and cruelty. It was simply a matter of selecting belief. That was it. There was nothing more. But as he looked into the storm, he felt as if he were looking at something that he could only express in words that came from the language of myths. It felt like looking into the face of a god.
"A vortex, you said," said Manetius,
his voice seeming to harmonize with the static of the vox.
"I thought you were intending your words to be metaphorical."
"And the storm is spreading outwards and increasing in strength," said Cord. "This is an eater, bigger than I have ever heard tell of. Anything that goes in is unlikely to come out."
"You spent the lives of almost all those under your command to come this far," said Manetius. "You had the strength to spend their lives, but not your own."
Cord kept his eye on the wall of rolling dust. Sweat was stinging his eyes.
"Colonel, I saw something."
It was Arrigo, from the position just in front of Cord, his voice breaking through his thoughts. Cord felt the fear recede and become an itch at the back of his skull. The gunner had turned to look back at him, eyes wide and bright behind the lenses of his suit.
"Had it on the infrasight for a second, then it went. But it was there, a machine."
"For certain?" Cord asked.
"For certain."
"We're going in,"
he said into the vox, then switched to speak to the rest of War Anvil's crew.
"All positions stand by to advance. Weapons ready."
"Colonel, the storm,"
called one of the crew, but he was not listening enough to even recognize their voice.
"Advance,"
he said. And a second later, War Anvil obeyed his will. The winds closed over them with fingers of air which slammed against the hull and rattled grit on the hatches. Within a minute, they could not see anything with their normal eyes, except a swirling layer of dust the colour of bruises. Images danced and collapsed on the Auspex screen. The infrasights showed nothing. Every few moments, lightning would split the view through the sight. War Anvil rocked as it ground onwards. Cord was breathing slowly, feeling his heart hammer as he waited for something to appear on the scoop. The drill went silent. Herend felt the ground beneath his feet become still. He turned, suddenly aware that he had been drifting. Time had passed as the storm pulled at them. They were at its centre, he was certain, but even here they felt its touch. The shapes of the other machines were unmoving, with billowing dust shrouding them and then revealing their shapes again. The heat signatures of each were a low murmur of brightness in his heat sight. The breath of the air was muted, hushed, waiting. Herend turned towards the excavator. The great machine was awake, its engine still turning. Cables connecting it to its drill head disappeared down a wide hole angled into the ground. They looked slack, as though cut while under tension.
"What is the drill status?"
asked Herend.
"It is no longer functioning," said the monotone servitor. "Cause unknown."
Herend walked to the opening in the ground. The drill had cut down at an angle, creating a sloped passage which slid to a cold darkness. The sides of the hole were rough glass, fused solid by fusion torches. The lights mounted on Hren's shoulders lit with a thought. The hard, white light spilled down the glistening shaft. Far down, something glinted, a hard edge of something reflective catching the light. The cables and feeds for the drill head lay on the floor, two lines plunging down, beckoning. Hren was about to turn when he heard something. He went still and turned slowly back to the hole. The black disk of the shaft's depths filled his sight, its edges fraying the light he shone at it. He heard the sound again, distant but distinct, a whisper of a voice that should not be here. Inside the coffin of his body, he felt his true body shiver. The wind gusted around him, dust scraping across his frame. The blank disk before him seemed to swell and push against the light. It did not look like dark pooling at the end of a tunnel now. It looked like a black sun. He took a step down the tunnel. The glass layer crunched under his foot. He felt calm, cold even. The wind was spilling a gauze of dust down the tunnel. He took another step. His footing slipped, and suddenly he was falling, glass screaming as metal scored into its surface. He tried to turn, but his sight was a crazed mass of warning runes. He slammed to a halt. His sight fizzed for a second, then steadied. He rose, the light from his carapace touching the rainbow sheen of the walls. He looked back up the shaft. The sky was a distant circle high above. He turned his gaze back to what had stopped his descent. The drill head, or what remained of it, lay across the tunnel. A neat slice ended the blunt mass of the machine after a meter. It simply stopped after that, as if something had cleaved the front portion away. Hren shifted and watched as the stab light caught the bright edges of precisely cut metal. Hren looked up at what lay just beyond the truncated drill. A wall of black stone met the beams of light. It was part of a larger structure. Hren could see that at a glance. The slight curvature of the stone told him that he was looking at a small part of a great curved wall, perhaps even a circle, hidden beneath the ground like a buried crown. Its substance looked like no stone or crystal Hren had ever seen. At first it seemed opaque, but as Hren watched, the light slid beneath the surface and kindled reflections within its depths. It was then that he saw the carving on the surface. A face was looking out at him. It was not human. Wide eyes looked out from a slim face above a mouth filled with needle teeth. It might have been snarling. It might have been grinning. It might have been screaming. He heard something behind him, a low sound, somewhere between a hiss and a laugh. He turned, and the light found only the glass of the passage walls. Hren turned back to the wall of black stone. He froze. In his capsule of amniotic fluid, his true body shivered uncontrollably. The carved face had moved. Its lips had closed over its shark smile, and its head had turned, its gaze seeming to focus on a point just...
"Iron," said a voice behind him.
He twisted, arming his weapons. A figure stepped from the blackness. Its presence seemed to strain at the boundaries of the machine that encased it. Black pit eyes looked at Hren as it halted.
"Do you still wish to be iron?"
asked the face of Perturabo. The skies of Talon danced with light. Re-entry fires streaked the dark, hundreds of them, thousands of them. The stars hid behind the blink of low-orbit explosions. Iron was pouring out of the sky, landers, drop pods, gunships and attack craft falling from the heavens. Beneath them, the night side of Talon bubbled with explosions, sparkling as though scattered with liquid gold. Argonis climbed, running the engines red, listening to warning chimes ring in his ears, but not listening. He was hauling the sickle blade on a corkscrew path towards the point of light that was the iron blood. Thinning atmosphere streamed past the sickle blade. Feathers of heat edged its wings. Space bloomed above Argonis, and the roar of passing air dropped away. Alert chimes screamed from his helm. Threat warnings flashed at the edge of his eyes. He slammed the sickle blade into a tumble as lines of Lazlight scored the void behind it.
"Brother!"
Volk's voice fizzed across the vox.
"Cut your engines!"
Argonis glanced at the Auspex. A trio of runes was closing on him fast. Weapon lock warnings chimed in his ears. Ahead of him, the marker of the Iron Blood was swelling in his sight. Screens of ships and shoals of fighter craft blistered the void around it.
"Now you fire on me, you fire on the War Master," said Argonis. "You have drawn our blood. You have broken our trust."
"Well, there is no trust left in this war, brother."
"You will not escape."
"I do not intend to escape."
"Whatever you intend, you will die here."
"You did know your limitations, brother," said Argonis, and cut the connection. Hostile weapon lock alerts screamed in his ear. He spun the sickle blade, shedding countermeasures in a fireburst cloak. Bursts of lasfire licked the void. He was breathing hard, gravity slamming into him like hammer blows. He fired his thrusters, and the sickle blade tumbled.
"Missiles loose and locked onto us,"
said Sotanul's voice. "I am aware," he said. An explosion bloomed in the spinning night as a missile hit a decoy pod. He waited, feeling the G-force smear his flesh against the inside of his armor. The Iron Blood and its escorts were closing fast. There were a lot of ships in the spheres around Talon, the war in the void mirroring the escalating battle on the ground.
"Incoming ordnance!"
called Sotanul, and building-sized torpedoes were suddenly burning past him. He spun through their thrust wick. The Iron Warriors were close behind, lacing the void with lasfire. Everything was getting very tight. Flying directly into a battle sphere was not ideal, but did give Argonis certain advantages. A pursuing missile cluster hit one of the warheads and detonated. The torpedo corkscrewed off course, hit another warhead, and the void became a bright layer of boiling light. The sickle blade rode ahead of the blast wave. Warships loomed ahead of them. Stitched planes of cannon fire spread from their flanks. Challenges and warnings filled Argonis's ears. The trio of strike fighters broke from the inferno behind him, dragging banners of burning gas.
"Those ships have seen us."
Argonis ignored the tech witch and flicked the vox to a multiple band, maximum power transmission.
"Iron Blood and escorts, this is Argonis, emissary of War Master Horus and bearer of his will. You will prepare for us to come aboard."
A clod of burning debris spun in front of the sickle blade. Argonis rolled under it. Behind him, the three strike fighters hugged close. Lasbolts streaked past.
"Cut your engines now," said Volk over the vox.
Argonis flipped the sickle blade over, watched a target rune lock green on a strike fighter, and squeezed a firing trigger. The closest fighter became a burst of blue and white light. The sickle blade flipped back over and rolled away from its kill.
"Fall back, Volk," said Argonis. "You were never good enough to take me, and mercy does not suit me."
A scattering of lasbolts answered. Argonis switched back to the broad transmission and spoke again.
"Iron Blood, this is the emissary of the War Master. I demand immediate audience with your Primarch."
Identification ciphers travelled with his words. No reply came. Behind him, the two remaining strike fighters were closing and firing. The Iron Blood was a growing splinter of light against the stars, its shields fizzing as it ploughed through battle debris.
"In the name of Horus, you will comply."
He could see the great gun batteries of both the flagship and its escorts, building-sized barrels yawning at him with the promise of certain obliteration. So far to come, he thought, and the dance of light and explosions seemed to fade into a background. So far from the tunnels of Chthonia, so far from a near-starved youth with a mirror knife and a false smile. He was not sure if he would have chosen the decades of life he had lived, but then it seemed there was little choice in this life, and the first lesson of the gang wars he had learned was the only thing that still held true. We are born alone, and if we live, it is alone, and in the end, we die alone. His hands went still on the controls, and the sickle blade's dance became a simple, straight line drawn towards its future. Fire and darkness slid past him. He heard voices, but did not listen to them. He did not want this. He had never wanted any of it, but there had never been an alternative besides the swift, endless fall to oblivion. He thought of those he had grown up with, the gang warriors who had bled out into the dark. He thought of the brothers he had watched go down to Istvan III, not realizing it was the last thing they would ever do. He thought of Horus, the warrior king who was his master, his primarch, but not his father. And he waited for the fire and the silence beyond.
Emissary.
The voice filled his head and grated down his spine. The Lazfire had vanished from the void around him. The markers of the two remaining strike fighters moved into positions just beyond his wingtips.
You wish my presence, so come to me, said the voice of Perturabo.
In front of Argonis, the guns of the Iron Blood turned away, and he saw doors open on a blackened waiting space within, like teeth around a mouth. The Iron Warriors fired as they broke into the gantry. Io had an instant to recognize the scream of rotor cannons spinning up. Then the first line of bullets cut across the platform. Yalen dived to the side. Behind him, the two Alpha Legionnaires were dropping and firing, the gun booming a counter-rhythm to the scream of the cannons. Data. Estimated force of Iron Warriors deployed 15. She could see them out of the corner of her eye. Heavy silhouettes of armor, slab shields, and glowing gun barrels. They were advancing down the gantry, shaking it with synchronized strides. She had brought them here, a timed signal aimed precisely to bring an Iron Warrior's detail here at this moment. Without Argonis's breakout, it would not have worked. She had brought target and termination together, just as intended. The Alpha Legion warriors were calling to each other, short, harsh stubs of decisions and commands. Yalen was flat on the grating. She saw one of the Alpha Legion warriors begin to move forward towards the pinned man. A second rotor cannon opened up and cut the warrior in half before he had taken a stride. Yalen turned his head where he lay. She was looking right into his eyes. She felt something move in her mind, an echo of disbelief and fury. The tattoos of serpents and lizards were squirming under his eyes. She still could not move, but she thought of nodding and knew that he felt the gesture. The Iron Warrior's fire shifted. Yalen began to rise. A round pinged from the floor grating and blew out his knee in a shower of bone and blood. He stumbled, tattooed face twisting in pain. He pushed himself up. A line of rotor cannon fire ripped him in two. Data. Two of three triplet operatives, designate name Yalen, eliminated. The numbness pinning her limbs released. There was a lot of pain to cope with. She tensed her muscles. Splintered bones cut into them. Fresh pain. Hard rounds ripped through the gantry, shaking it, shredding it. The Iron Warriors had formed a shield wall 30 paces away. The rotor cannon fire stopped. The last Alpha Legion warrior was still alive, but had retreated, trying to reach a point where he could exit the kill zone. She saw movement behind the shield wall, and two narrow gaps opened in its front. The muzzles of heavy flamers thrust through the gaps, pilot lights bright against scorched metal. She rolled to her left, her hand finding and grasping her visor. The torn edge of the gantry framed a drop to darkness. She paused for an eye blink, hearing the rising pressure of the flamer hoses, seeing the black gulf below. The end was so close now, all the lines of possibility drawing to a point, to a resolution. The projection said that most likely things would proceed without her now. Causality had developed its own irreversible momentum. Most likely. An imprecise phrase, the kind of phrase that would have earned her punishment and scorn from her mentor. But she was beyond exhausted, and the old master was a long time dead. The flamers fired. She rolled over the edge of the gantry, blackness rising to meet her as flames filled the air above.